Welcome to Indie Radio Garden, this week's highlights from community radio in the Philadelphia region.
This program brings ordinary citizens to the air to discuss issues related to health, race, safety, workers' rights, and the will to survive in pandemic times.
The first audio is from WHGE 95.3 FM, founded by the Afro-American Historical Society of Delaware. An interview between Pavel Uranga from the Scrap Radio Project and WHGE founder Harmon Carey about the history of the radio station.
We are here with Mr. Harmon Carey from which radio?
WHGE LP, and we broadcast over 95.3 FM. And our listening audience is pretty much the city of Wilmington, Delaware.
Thank you. And this radio, it's not a common community radio because it's related with the African American Historical Society.
I am the principal founder and now CEO of the first Black Historical Society in the state of Delaware. It's called the Afro-American Historical Society of Delaware. I sometimes am asked, why did you call it Afro instead of African? Well, at the time we established the organization, Afro was the more commonly used name. But ours is an historical organization in which our focus is on the preservation and research having to do with African-American history, with a particular focus on Delaware. But there is such a void in terms of local Black history that that's where we determined to place our emphasis.
I'm assuming that struggle to found the Historical Society has related with the struggle for the civil rights. Can you tell us a little about that?
The organization was founded in the mid-1980s after the historic civil rights fights were being waged. So our focus has not been on civil rights, except that there have been some aspects of history which have been excluded. And in that sense, there's a civil rights component. Let me give you an example. During the what they call the first bicentennial, Delaware made plans to acknowledge and pay tribute to our constitutional forefathers, so to speak. And for example, one of the founding fathers of Delaware was a man named John Dickinson, was a former governor of both Pennsylvania and Delaware. And he was highly renowned and respected in Delaware. He had a home in Lower Delaware near Dover, Delaware. So the plans for this bicentennial celebration included restoration of his mansion, replication of certain buildings like the smokehouse and the barn. And all these plans were being made in honor of Delaware's great John Dickinson. I raised this question. What are you doing about to record the history of the slaves who were owned by John Dickinson? Well, John Dickinson, at the period of time that we're talking about, John Dickinson he had released most of his slaves. That was the response to me. And I said, well, he had released most of his slaves, but not all of his slaves. Well, Mr. Carey, John Dickinson, his slaves lived in the house with him. some of the slaves, the house servants, lived there, but what about the slaves who worked in the field? Well, Mr. Carey, what are you suggesting? If you can build a replica of John Dickinson's barn and his smokehouse, build a replica of the slave quarters for these slaves who worked in the on the plantation. Now, Pavel, I'm not claiming some brilliance in saying that. I mean, you don't have to be Einstein. Use your common sense and be fair-minded. So just to carry this on and I won't belabor the point, they said to me, well, Mr. Carey, the slave quarters, we don't own the land that the slave quarters were on. The slave quarters were on the lot next door. So I said, well, why not go to the owners of the land next door and say, we would like to do some archaeological work to find out, you know, remains and of the slave quarters. So I threw another one at him. I said, what do you have any reason to believe that the slave quarters in Delaware were that much different than the slave quarters in nearby Maryland? If go down there and get the design you need. Anyway, back and forth. So they finally did it. They built a slave quarter, a house, a slave cabin. But the state of Delaware couldn't call it a slave cabin. They called it a logged dwelling. That word slave doesn't roll off their lips too strong, but it rolls off mine because I think that our contributions, both as when we were enslaved as well as after that, contributed in a significant way to the development of our state. So in that way, I guess you could say our efforts had a civil rights component to it.
That's what I thought about the struggle of the civil rights. We want to tell the history of the radio, of this particular radio has a commitment with the society, with the Black community. And that's why I want to ask you, why a radio?
Okay. I had no desire, no interest in establishing a radio station. I'd like to be able to say, you know, that was part of our vision, but it wasn't. In fact, when I got a call about 4 years ago from a listener, a community activist who used to listen to a radio program, which I hosted over one of Wilmington's largest radio stations, then WILM, I hosted a weekly show called The People's Pulse. And this listener called me and she said, Harmon, the FCC is opening up to receive licenses for low-powered radio station. I said, okay, and you should apply. I said to her, I don't know anything about running a radio station. You don't have to know. I said, yes, you do. So I said, find someone who's more expert, more experienced, and see if you can get him or her to apply. Well, she called me back in another week or so. Harmon, I can't find anyone else. You can do it. So I say to you with humility, I really doubted that I could do it, but I told her I would try. So we went online. I found the information having to do with applying for a radio station, and I filled out the application. And lo and behold, very much to my surprise, on the ranking system established by FCC in evaluating applications, I got a perfect score. I got the highest score you could get. And I'm leaving out some significant elements, but if I tell you in too much detail, we'll be here all day. I then contacted the FCC and I said, we want the 24 hours. And they got back and said, you got it.
And what is the role of Prometheus Radio Project on that?
Prometheus, I mean, they were like an angel. Prometheus really provided the technical support and expertise that we needed to establish this radio station. We had a deadline to go live. And if we didn't go live by that deadline, we would have lost the license. And Paul telling me what we needed in the way of equipment. I came up with the money to buy the equipment and he installed it. And we made the deadline, I think, by one day. We went live one day before we would have lost it. And it was all because of Paul Boehm and Prometheus and their interest in supporting community-based radio stations like ours.
How do you feel with this even political intention to do radio, to do community radio on your issues, on your history, on your community, re-empower the people to help the people to rise and re-empower the community from that thing you do on the radio?
I mean, you've kind of summed up where I have ended up, but that's not where I started. I was looking at the radio station more as a vehicle to educate the public about our history. Some of the issues that you're bringing up, I eventually got there. But from day one, I wasn't there. In fact, from day one, I wasn't even sure I could even establish a radio station. But there is something very, very important that I want to comment on as part of our history. Okay, we formed an organization, an advisory planning committee. And the goal of the committee, and these were people who had expertise and experience in radio. Their dream was that we should try to obtain space in an office building and that we should try to get permission from the owners of some of the high-rise buildings to put our antenna on. It led to my exploring with Prometheus this idea of opening a radio station in a property which I own. And that property is where our station is now. Billie Holiday said, God bless the child who has his own. Now, we have the station in a building. They can't put us out for not paying the rent or anything else. It's ours. And I feel that that gives us an extra wall of insulation for us to be able to do things that we want to do, which we may not be able to do if we were living under the threat of having to succumb and not get involved and not speak out on issues that are not in concert with the powers that be. I was born 6 blocks from where our radio station is now. I was born on 5th Street. Our radio station is on 9th Street. So I haven't gone very far in life. I'm right there. And I've seen the conditions under which our people labor. And I just have this sense that some of this stuff is wrong. And somebody's got to stand up against it, the things that we should oppose, and stand up for the things that we should support that are helpful to the community. I don't tell people who disagree with me that they can't have the microphone. In fact, I invite people to come on. If you don't agree with me or if you don't agree with our host, come on and explain yourself. Tell us why you think we're wrong. And I just promise you this, we are going to respond to you. The same way we'll give you the microphone, we reserve the right to respond to what you're saying.
The indigenous people said, we need to know where we came from so we can realize where we need to go.
Absolutely.
If we don't know our history, we cannot find the path to the future. The people need to be related with the local history to strengthen the community, to empower the community, to give more tools in the community.
That as we're able to educate the community about the men and women who preceded us and who fought for many of the privileges and opportunities we now have, we are able to also instill in young people's minds and create an impetus for them to want to do and be like and emulate the people who we were teaching them about.
We present to you audio from the Community Voice PHL Talk Show, hosted by Jeff Jones and Jacqueline Jordan on WPPM 106.5 FM Philly Cam. From a more recent episode entitled, How Do We Process the Chauvin Verdict?, the host discussed reparations, black trauma, and more specifically harm caused by the Penn Museum and Princeton University in keeping and using remains of MOVE bombing victims, Delisha and Tree Africa.
There are challenges in this space as well with people not knowing the history, right? Black folks, you know, if you were born, if you're a Gen Xer, you know about the MOVE bombing. You lived through the MOVE bombing. You know, I was six when the MOVE bombing occurred. And I do remember seeing it on TV and seeing Osage Avenue burning. And so to find this information out at this time or any time is incredibly challenging for me. And just to add one other thing, both universities, Princeton University and Penn, according to both universities, Princeton and Penn, Mann was given custody of the remains by the Philadelphia Medical Examiner's Office in the 1980s when he analyzed them at the city's request. At the time, he worked at Penn. When Mann transferred to Princeton in 2001, he reportedly took the bones with him. So you have a white guy who's traveling around with the bones of two dead children. And I know I said that with no sensitivity, and I meant to say that with no sensitivity, because I want the impact of what that sounds like to reverberate through people's ears and through people's minds. You had a white man decide that he was going to take those bones of two dead children who died in the most horrific way that completely disseminated a community of black people. And he took them to another university to sit in a box, in a closet somewhere, unattended, uncared for. Now, if you know us, you know that honoring the dead and honoring the souls of the dead and also honoring the bones of the dead is incredibly, incredibly important to our community. We may have moved away from that, but traditionally, these things are very, very critical and important to our community. And the more I study and the more I read and the more I think about and digest information about African diasporic religions, the more I realize that part of the challenge that Black people today have, contemporary Black folks or African Americans have today, is that our ancestors are really pissed off with us. And they are pissed off with us because of things like this. And the family, you know, not blaming the family at all because they had no idea and they didn't know. But the fact that there is someone who in their possession has the bones of children, of African children in their possession is absolutely completely appalling. And the interesting thing about it is that white folks don't seem to have a problem with it.
Not at all. Because it's you know, it's all monetized and commodified for them. Again, it's for show and play. You know, it's just, again, how they use black folk for entertainment, show and play and sport and all for financial gains. I mean, it kind of reminds me of a scene from Django. And if any of you saw that movie Django, it's Leonardo DiCaprio's character. He has a collection of skeleton bone heads of black folk. And he's up here showing off how he knows about black folks, but it's based on the brains and the skulls and all that. It's the same type of thing for that gaze of the wonder of the black folk. I can only imagine some of the conversations in that class. Now, of course, some of it is based on academia and that type of knowledge, right? But I can only imagine how they're talking about, oh, this bone broke because of the strength of the black person, because there's resistance, all that kind of crazy stuff, again, just about how the black body is strong and built and how that's traumatizing again. But like you said, Jack, they don't care. It's just like, I want to grade. And then just for me, it's just like, I can only wonder if there were any black people in that class who was appalled and said, well, wait a minute.
Well, that's the challenge. the number of black students in anthropological courses and in that major is incredibly low.
Exactly.
Penn's anthropology department is on fire. They have had scandal after scandal after scandal after scandal. And this is just the latest in the issues and challenges that the Penn anthropological department has had. they have had some problems.
Yeah.
Now, if you want, you can read about it. Mm-hmm. You don't have to ask me, right? You can read about it. But before this story actually came out, Penn has decided that they were going to return some of the artifacts that they have acquired, right? They love that word acquired, right? Stole. and we're going to return them to their rightful place. Mm-hmm. But also we saw last month, I believe, the parade in Egypt, parading the bodies of pharaohs in a parade. I mean, it's just like, y'all, what are we doing in this sort of space and in this place? Black people, again, I'm going to say it again, we know when it comes to conjure, when it comes to Yoruba, when it comes to any African diasporic religion, and I know most of my Christian friends will call that witchcraft and all that stuff. But when you talk about Vodou, you talk about Hoodoo, you talk about all of it, you talk about Santeria, you talk about all of these things, bones and bodies and souls and ancestors are important.
Yeah.
And when you defile them, which is why they don't, my friends in the Muslim community, one of the things that I've always found so beautiful about the way in which they honor those that have passed on is that you can't nobody just touch that body once that body is gone. Someone has to come and prepare the body and clean the body properly. This is tradition for us, always has been, always will be. You don't just cut bodies open and take stuff out, right? Now, I understand gift of life and all that kind of stuff. However, it is important in many traditions that you don't just cut nobody open and start taking out organs, right? Because they need those organs. They need those preserved for the next life. They need to have their body in total and complete, however they pass, but it needs to be intact for the next life. These things are important to us, y'all. And we can pretend like, you know, in terms of Christianity, that we don't do that kind of stuff no more, and that's voodoo and that's witchcraft. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
You look in the Bible about shrouded bodies, bodies being clean. When Mary, I'm not going to start preaching. I can't, but I'm not. When they went to the tomb, you know, when Jesus, they made sure that Jesus' body was clean.
Yeah.
Right? So let's not pretend that this is not part of who we are. It's part of who we are to honor the dead in that space. And let me tell you something. The spirit of those children could be walking around not being able to go where they need to go because their bones and their bodies were not honored properly. And so we got to start thinking about that too. As we strategically move forward in a place of liberation for Black people, we have to start thinking about how we honor our ancestors, not just in our actions, but how we honor our ancestors through prayer, how we honor our ancestors through supplication, how we honor our ancestors and those who have gone before us and guided us. We have to make sure that we honor people properly. White folks, get your hands off of Black bodies. We are not for your study. We are not for your research. We are not for any of that. Black people have had an incredible amount of trauma in that space. You look at Henrietta Lacks. You look at the father of modern gynecology who would take slave women. You look at all of these things. You look at migrants at the border and those women, the Black woman who exposed that, the Black doctor or nurse, I'm sorry, the Black nurse who exposed that, how those women were being sterilized and those women were being tested and researched on. We gotta look at that, y'all, because this is just as much a part of our liberation and our freedom as anything. The way in which we treat those who have passed on. And we gotta start incorporating that when we talk about strategy and Black liberation. We have to start incorporating that into a space. Return what belongs to Black folks back to Black folks. And there are several things that they, I'll go into that after I announce the rally that they're going to have.
Okay, cool. Yeah, because we definitely got to get back to returning black folk, things that belong to Black folk, because, you know, it's like we've had so much taken away and we've had the history of showing that our bodies are no longer valued. And now, again, dead or alive, they're not valuing our bodies. They're still commodifying or looking at ways to make sure that there can be some gains. And it just kind of resonates with me. Again, I go back to the title of Dr. Janet's course, Real Bones, Adventures in Forensic Anthropology. Adventures.
Shameful.
They're looking at this as an adventure, as in a game, as a wonder. And they've even part of that class is a case study on MOVE. They're doing a case study. They're doing an in-depth analysis on an academia level about real Black bodies, right? And they're re-traumatizing, again, the family by just exposing the fact that this information is out there. And those bones are not at rest. And Jack went into great detail talking about how you have to make sure that the black bodies are intact so that souls can traverse to the to place of grounding and a place of elevation. But if those black bodies are not intact, then it leads that souls to still be wandering in an ethereal space of not knowing where it can transition to next. And that soul is still present in this earth looking for that rest. And so we have to be mindful of that because, again, as Jack alluded to and was quite clear about, we have to make sure every area, whether it's politically, socially, economically, and spiritually, we're fighting for our liberation. And I know, again, our Christian friends would challenge us in some regards. So send us an email to communityvoicephl@gmail.com.
Or don't.
Or don't. But there is a battle on the spiritual plane that we have to look at. There are things that are happening politically. Yes, we have to address socially, economically. Yes, we have to address those. But if you akin to having yourself understanding a higher power, a deity, a God, a Jesus, a Buddha, a Muhammad, you know that there's a spiritual essence at play here as well. And we can't be naive to that. We can't think that some things are just happenstance when we're worshiping or honoring a God, that whomever that God will be. So I'm saying that to say that there's the levels of how we have to attack this for our liberation. Spiritually is one, and we can't deny it. And this case with Dr. Mann and Dr. Janet is upsetting the spiritual balance of the liberation and freedom and elevation of homeward bound of our people, particularly Delisha and Tree Africa. And it traumatizes the family, and it should traumatize us, because just think, these aren't the only black bones that they're probably dealing with. There's probably other black bones that they're dealing with for people who may not have as quote unquote prominence in society as the Africans did. But they're probably still doing it because, again, it doesn't matter to them. As long as they can get people to register for the course and begin to have white gaze on black bodies in a space where they can monetize it again, commodify dead or alive, it's a shame that we let this happen. And we can't be naive to this because we have to put ourselves in positions of knowledge and power. And again, Google and research everything that we talked about. Again, shoot us an email if you have any comments or suggestions or thoughts or feedback. We'd love to hear it, but we also would love to be able to know that we're elevating the consciousness of our people, because with Community Voice, one of the things we do is inform, engage, and inspire. And at Higher Ground, we just take it to another level. So right now, we want to inform you about what's happening so that you can be engaged in making a difference and be inspired to be that one activist who can really act on things and not be reactive, but proactive in spaces as you're more informed and we take this conversation to a higher level. So, Jack, you want to jump in and talk about
the two last points that I'll make before we wrap up. One, the Gullah Geechee community in Hilton Head, South Carolina, is also facing some of these same challenges where gentrification is running rampant in that community, right? Mm-hmm. It's looked at as a vacation spot, right? Mm-hmm. A spot where, you know, white folks, rich white folks can go and kind of just hang out. However, a lot of land that's being sold is ancient burial ground. Mm-hmm. And so there may not be tombstones or headstones there. Mm-hmm. However, the ground is known to have the bodies of ancestors there in that particular mm-hmm. place. So there is a Gullah Geechee coalition. They have been doing tremendous, tremendous work in that community, making sure that the sacred ground of Black people in that area stay sacred and stay safe. So follow them on Facebook. They have a lot of great information. And I think they are sort of, and have been for many, many decades, leading the charge in the space of making sure that our culture is preserved. Mm-hmm. And the last thing that I said, there is a rally about this particular issue that we're talking about. Move Children Deserve to Rest in Peace. Mm-hmm. And that rally will be this Wednesday at 5:30 at the Penn Museum. I ain't giving you all the answers. I think it's 34. Google is free. Okay.
We'll drop the address in the comments.
Google. But they also have demands. So this is from Black Lives Philly Matter on their Facebook page. Mm-hmm. There are also demands. And thank you to Michael Africa Jr., mm-hmm. who I think has been an integral part of all of this. And prayers to his family and to the souls of Tree and Delisha, mm-hmm. that they find rest as their people galvanize together to make sure that those bones are safely returned to mm-hmm. them. And the demands are the immediate return of the remains of Delisha and Tree Africa, a full investigation of Penn and Princeton's role in the unethical possession of the remains, firing of Penn faculty Dr. Janet, a formal apology from Princeton and Penn. And number five are for me the things that matter most. Our folks want reparations for that.
Thanks for joining us. My name is Latif White, Operations Manager of WJYN 98.5 FM Uptown Radio. Indie Radio Garden is a Prometheus Radio Project production.